to thank you so much for joining us for Life on the Prairies. And I want to introduce Lindsay Alabat. And I'm going to actually let her tell you all about where she's from. And we're going to get in some really good information about her region, her province. But I always think it's really great when the person tells us about where they're from. So let's start off with that. Let's start off, Lindsay, with you know, your community, your region, where you're from. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your authority on economic development, and just, yeah, tell us all what you think we should know.
Sounds good. Well, thanks, Lindsay, for having me and for sharing such an awesome name with me.
Yes.
Well, so my name's Lindsay Alaban. I'm an economic development officer and a self-proclaimed rural enthusiast. So I love living in rural communities and on the prairies. So this is a very fitting time and topic to talk to you about. So I live in the small town of Hazlett, Saskatchewan, which is population 100 people. And we are in the southwest corner of Saskatchewan. So we're just a little bit of a drive, so about 45 minutes from Swift Current, which is the largest city near to us. And we have a beautiful little region filled with farming and oil, and actually helium is a new industry growing in this area. And I've grown up here, and I went away and did schooling, and then I came back here and started my career in economic development. And I really am passionate about all things small town and prairie life. So thanks so much for having me here.
Oh, you're welcome. So when we talk about your proximity from Vancouver to Toronto, because every time I talk to someone that's not really familiar with Canada per se, they're like, oh, well, where are you in proximity from Toronto or Vancouver? So I think you've given us a pretty good direction. But in terms of the prairies, Saskatchewan, where you are, is our middle province. Right.
So yeah, and that's often what I tell people as well. I've done a little bit of international student recruitment in my career, so that was definitely a line I used a lot. But basically, we're about right in the middle of both of those places. So Toronto is about 3,000 kilometers away, and Vancouver is about 1,500 kilometers away. So pretty smack dab in the middle.
Okay, but you have highways, you have everything that we need in order to get to your communities. So transportation to your communities is not a problem at all.
Yeah, it's we have one highway that runs right to Hazlett, and it actually ends here. So I always say we're the little pot of gold at the end of Highway 332. But it's really easy to get around here. And there's many communities surrounding us that I would say are more and more growing into one community. So we're a bit more regional than just siloed in each one of our villages or towns. And so we have a really good working cooperation with all of our neighbors, and that's makes it great because a lot of people work in the other communities near to us, go to school, take their kids to daycare. And we have those things in our community as well, a school and a daycare. But, you know, if one of the moms or dads is working in the next community over, we all kind of interchange. So it's a nice area of kind of suburban communities.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. So, let's jump into it, because the purpose for Life on the Prairies, this podcast, is to provide people with really solid information on, you know, communities, their jobs, the potential, so on and so forth, right? So if you're looking for somewhere to relocate, or if you're looking to immigrate, the number one question I'm often asked is, what's the labor force? Like, what are the job opportunities, be it in your community or the other communities that you just talked about?
Yeah, and I'd say there's a lot of different options. There are some high skill options with farming, oil and gas, and lots of trade work. So electricians, plumbing, instrumentation, truck driving, those would all be ones that I would say if you have those skills, there'd be a lot of opportunity across all of those industries. And then as well in a lot of the surrounding communities, retail and service industry has a lot of opportunities. There is as well a lot of entrepreneurial opportunities. So people who have run businesses for years and years and years are looking to retire, and they need someone to be their successor. So we have quite a few business opportunities if there are entrepreneurs looking for those opportunities here in small town Sask.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so let's go back to talking about the labor force opportunities in terms of the trades. Everybody that listens to my podcast knows I am a huge fan of tradespeople. And so when you become a tradesperson, or if you're looking at becoming a tradesperson, that you have to do an apprenticeship, is there the opportunity, if you are going to relocate or immigrate to your communities, do you think that there's opportunities for people, newcomers, to maybe train or have apprenticeships under tradespeople?
Yes. And what I would say is, a lot of times when I'm talking to people as well who want to immigrate or to come relocate to our communities, is either their certifications aren't authenticated yet, or they're having trouble like building that trust with employers. And so I think there's lots of opportunity to come with and get a job with an entry level position. So maybe being a laborer or working underneath some of the tradespeople here. And once you build that trust and show your ability, a lot of opportunity to grow within companies. So I definitely think that people should look for those entry level jobs to get connections and build trust to move into those higher level skilled positions that they might already have training in.
Yeah, no, definitely. And they could do trade qualifiers and so on and so forth. And I think the funny thing is that when I do talk to people, you know, be it from larger centers or people not from Canada, as they don't realize how much tradespeople make in our communities, right? So we often think that lawyers and doctors and teachers and like, you know, oh, those are like the jobs that make the most money. But, you know, in my hometown of only 700 people, we have our plumber and he charges me over $100 an hour, not including materials, right? So I think the potential in rural communities for people to become tradespeople is just really, is great.
There's a lot of potential, whether you want to be an employee of someone within trades, or if you wanted to run your own business. There are 10 small towns in our little 100 kilometer radius area that are just begging to have local plumbers, local electricians, local mechanics. So I think if someone has those skills and wants to start their own business, the opportunity is definitely there.
Yeah, because you get paid while you're an apprentice, right? So you get hired by someone to learn the trade and you're getting paid to learn. And really, so you go into no debt being a tradesperson, even while you're apprenticing. And then when you become a red sealer, get your ticket, you can still work for that company or you can choose to go on your own, right? So it's, yeah. So, you know, and speaking of that, I was going to jump to that later, but you just talked about the 100 kilometer radius. So in terms of commuting, that wouldn't be very far at all then. Like, what's the average commute time?
Yeah, I would say 30 to 45 minutes is most people's commute. Either direction from us, there's three communities that are 25, 30 minutes. The city of Swift Current's 45 minutes by highway. And the city of Medicine Hat, which is in the province over, it's about an hour 45. So it's a bit larger, but it's not too far away either. And so it's a peaceful commute. There isn't traffic. The worst you're probably going to find is deer on the road or maybe a cow, but there it's a peaceful drive. And I think that's people, especially who live from or move from larger cities and come here, the commute is always like a relaxing part of their day because they can listen to a podcast, they can listen to music or talk on the phone while they're making their commute and that not deal with red lights or backed up traffic. So
yeah, that's brilliant. I really like that view because it's so true, because I drive a lot and people are like, how do you drive a lot? And I was like, well, because I can listen to podcasts. I'm not having to worry about all these different, you know, like changing lanes or being caught in traffic for an hour, hour and a half, right? It's just you get in your car, you go, you're there. Mm-hmm. Right. So
yeah, it's actually some of the teachers that live in my community, a couple of them drive 30 or 40 minutes to come teach here. And they say they love their morning drive because they can unwind. They can kind of plan their teaching process in the morning and make mental notes for themselves. And then in the afternoon, when they're driving home after school, they can kind of unwind before they get to the home to their family and and not be disturbing their home life with the energy they've been getting from the school. So.
Well, yeah, no. And so I think, and oftentimes people don't realize the importance of a commute, and they are trying to capture that time back, right? So if you're currently in a community or a larger center where you're having to spend 2-3 hours, which is realistic, like it's unheard of for us out here in the prairies, but I know that people do spend a lot of time commuting. So they're trying to get their time back to spend with their families. So I think, you know, touching on that and speaking about commuting in rural areas is also very important, because I think it's actually a very positive thing for us. Okay, so we talked about jobs. Is there anything else you want to add in terms of the labor market or anything like that?
I would just say that one point with that there is a commute, it is really important to have a vehicle and a license for living in these locations, because that is one downfall for rural Saskatchewan, is we don't have a lot of public transit.
Yeah, for sure. So if you come, then you have to make sure that you, or you have the ability to access transportation and but there's carpooling. I know like a lot of people, you know, want to save money and, you know, even kilometers on their car. So they'll often like do carpooling. And so there's alternate ways to do it as well.
Yeah, and there's definitely those options.
Okay, so that's awesome. So after labor, after employment, so I often get asked that. So what are the jobs out there? What can I do? Then we have to talk about housing. And I know this is a national, it's an epidemic basically, and that housing is a hot issue nationally. And a lot of people are very concerned about the cost of living, and most of it goes with housing. Where are they going to live? So that's the exact same question I get all the time is, okay, so now that I know there's really great jobs out there, which we have, then we often get asked about housing. So if you want to talk to us a little bit about housing affordability and so on and so forth, whatever you want to tell us about your housing situation in your region, that'd be great.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, it is a problem across Canada. With growing population, and Saskatchewan's having a significant growth in population. So housing is a bit of a challenge at the moment. Luckily, something smaller communities offer is the affordable living. So my favorite thing that I love about my community, besides it being really welcoming and great and having all the things that I like to do here, my favorite piece of living in a small community is that it is affordable. I can work less amount of time. I cannot stress as much with debt or bills, because I can live for $600 a month or $800 a month. And that is the best part of small town living. That being said, we do have some opportunities in these communities with larger houses that are often for sale or rent. But I would say I looked up the real estate listings a couple of weeks ago in this region. So I'm talking about, you know, 100, 125 kilometer radius. And the most expensive house was $250,000. But that was probably out on its own. Most houses were under $200,000, and the lowest being $40,000 to purchase a house. So that just kind of gives you an example of how easy and attainable it is to buy a home. And I would say rent runs from about $600 to $1,500, depending how large of a home. But there's definitely opportunities for housing. But I would say 2 to 5 homes in each community is kind of available. So it is a lower amount right now than our usual vacancy rates, but still opportunity for people to find homes if they do find jobs in this area.
So what size of homes are we talking about? Like 3-bed, 2-bath or?
Yeah, I would say definitely all, well, in my community specifically, we don't have any apartments or 1-bedrooms. We have on the market right now, there's one home that's a 2-bedroom, 1-bath with a full basement. Then there's another home with 5 bedrooms, 2 bath, and it's for sale for $160,000.
Wow.
So yeah, really good options. And right now we're starting to see a little bit of the retirement age kind of shifting in the homes they want. So some of them are bringing in smaller homes and selling their larger homes that they raise their families in. So that's kind of a trend we're starting to see, as well as a lot of the communities in this area are doing some housing initiatives. So we're trying to bring in duplexes and multi-unit homes to help people who are trying to get started in a community and find a job here. So,
you know, so I think
definitely initiatives.
It's important to touch on something you're just talking about. And okay, so the price of housing, right? But then you look at the employment opportunities that we have. And there's lots of employment opportunities. I looked up in your area as well, where you are getting paid just as well as if you were in the city. You know, there are lots of jobs.
I would say the income level is quite high in these rural communities, and the cost of living is quite low. So it's the data shows it, and it's just making people understand that their quality of life can be just as good in these outsides of the cities that they could get in the city.
And if not better, right? Because mm-hmm. you're looking at it because you have high income and you have low cost of housing. And also, I think we're going to talk about schools there here in a bit. But, you know, what I often say to people is that if you have a family, your children are probably have a better chance of being on the volleyball team or the curling or whatever it is, right? So, and you can get to that, and get to that practice within a couple of minutes instead of having to, you know, like get in the car and go through an hour of traffic and then be at practice and then have to, you know, come back. Or, you know, having to take your child all the way across the city because they unfortunately just didn't make this team, right? And so you mm-hmm. have no other options but to do that. But in a rural town, your children actually have more opportunity to participate in different, you know, in different sports as well.
Yeah, I would agree. There is no tryouts. Everybody gets to participate if they want and get that opportunity to be in drama, volleyball, curling, badminton. You know, all of those options are there. And often the kids are encouraged to join, even if it's not their number one interest. And it just gives them that opportunity to be more social and participate in team sports.
So we got,
which I think is very important.
Yeah, we got high income. We got housing is very affordable. And we have our children participating in extracurricular activities, right? And your commute is not really long at all. So,
no.
So far, I think we're making a good case for where you live, especially.
Well, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for extracurricular for adults as well. That's a big part of my life. I love sports. I love taking part in educational opportunities. And we have weekly fitness classes here of all different fitness levels, you know, from yoga to high intensity fitness to weightlifting. We have educational classes around entrepreneurship, accounting, agriculture, and cooking classes. We have all sorts of classes that families can take part in of all ages. So that is a really important thing, I think, as well, that there's a lot of different ways that adults can be social here as well as their kids.
So what's your average participation fee? So like for adults, if you're going to go and you're going to participate in, you know, weightlifting or something like that, what's your drop-in fee or is it,
yeah,
you know?
Right now we're running some programming for fitness, which is only $5 to drop in. So we have some great funding options here where we access funding to offer affordable classes to adults.
Wow, that's great.
So that's been really excellent. Yeah.
Wow.
And we're running some sourdough cooking classes or sourdough baking classes at the end of the month. And that's going to be $25.
Look at all this fun stuff you guys have going on. That is so great. Okay. So, and I know I'll mention this on future episodes, but oftentimes as well, people will be like, oh, I'm going to live in the city because, you know, when my child goes to university or college, I want to be able to save that money, you know, so I'm not paying rent or whatever for them, right? But if you look at, if you're buying a house for $200,000 with the same house you have to buy for $850,000 somewhere else, so you're really telling me that you want to, in the long run, you're going to be paying $600,000 in rent for your child, right? So please split, you know, like people need to think of that as well, is that the cost of housing, and then saying, you know, you can always move, you know, you can always move if there's a university or college that your child wants to go to, and you want to go there with them to save on cost of living. But during those 18 years or those 15 years that your child's going to be with you, I think that, you know, choosing a community where it's affordable to live, the housing is, you know, cost effective over somewhere where you're going to have to drive 2 hours to get to your job, you're going to be paying nearly $1 million for the same house you would have got. You have the exact same income if you would have been living in your region, right? So I think there's a lot to be said to kind of provide that education or awareness that we do have a lot of great stuff going on.
Yeah, and one point around the cost of living as well is that a few people have relocated to various communities in this area that were living in more in larger centers, larger cities, and had really high stress corporate jobs, and just decided that that wasn't serving them, and realized that they could work a high paying job, whether it was remote or in this area, live in a more affordable home, travel for half time of the year, and still have the same amount in their bank account. So that is something I think is important as well to everyone's stress level and mental health, is that you have more time with your family, you have more time for vacations and socializing if you live more affordably and don't have to work as hard or as often. And that's, I think, a big asset to living somewhere that has more affordable options for housing.
Okay, awesome. So I kind of want to jump ahead, because we talked about the basics of what everybody usually asks me when they're looking to relocate or immigrate somewhere. But you actually have a lot of good projects going on in your region. And, you know, so when you go to a city, people are like, oh, they're, you know, they have all these great projects. But when they go to a rural area, they're thinking, oh, they really have nothing going on, you know, really what's innovative and about, you know, this rural town, right? So I want to jump into your international school that you guys have there. And I want you just to tell us, like, how it started, you know, like why it started, how's it going, what's your future goals for it. So tell us everything that you want about this project.
Yeah, I could talk all day about it because I live and breathe it. So I love it a lot.
Excellent.
So basically in around 2006, we had a declining population locally. So which in turn dropped our enrollment within our school, and our school is a kindergarten to grade 12 school. So I spent 10 years of my education life in that school, and I wouldn't change it for anything. I had all the opportunities that any person in the city had. And when I was in grade 12, there was only 30 students in that school. So it was a little bit dismal. It was like, we only had a couple people in our classes, you know, you didn't have as much, you know, opportunity for teams. You kind of had to travel away. And some, one of our returning teachers, who was just coming back from maternity leave, thought, hey, wouldn't there be an option to bring in international students to our school, which would maybe make our school stand out a little bit, as well as put more kids in our classrooms for our kids to socialize and learn more about, and bring some diversity to the community. So that's what she did. She initiated this international program, which ended up bringing, since 2006, it's now 2024. So we've probably had 200 plus students come through this program to our school. These students come for 5 or 10 months. They come from all over the world: Brazil, Mexico, Hong Kong, Japan, Thailand, all over Europe, and Saudi Arabia. We've had people from all over. And what it did to our community is it brought diversity and culture. We have an annual international celebration where people can highlight their culture's food, games, show videos of where they're from, etc. It's brought life to our school. A lot of rural communities surrounding us who might have lost their schools recognized that we were doing something different, and a different opportunity for their kids to learn right from organic interactions in their classrooms. And so those families chose to bring their kids here because of what we were doing. These students are living with host families locally. So they're getting a chance to experience life on a farm, on a ranch, living in a smaller community, walking to school and not being worried about anything. The safety is a really big feature of our program to families that are sending their students from larger cities. And we just can't, we could have never imagined what that was, that program was going to do to our school. I myself have four or five international siblings that lived with our family as we started the program. I also have three or four now kids that I have hosted myself as an adult now. So I have a vast family of international kids living across the world that I've gone to visit and get to experience their communities as well. And then I think the other part of it is lots of these kids have came back to visit, increasing the tourism in this area. And some of them have even immigrated to Canada to live because of their experience here. So I just think it's been the most magnificent thing that could have happened to our school, let alone our community. So it's pretty rare to have a rural Saskatchewan community with as much diversity as we have experienced here. So that it's been amazing. And like I said, I could talk all day about it. But
so what's the project called?
The Chinook International Program. So it's operated out of our entire school division, but there's only two schools. Hazlett was the only school that was taking international students for about 15 years, but another school has reached out and they are now doing it as well. So now we have two schools within our division that are hosting students. And currently we have a student from Germany. We had two students from France earlier this year. And a student from Hong Kong and a student from Taiwan. And we also had a student from Chile.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it truly is diverse. So you would think that, or you had mentioned that now you feel your community is a lot more welcoming, and that would you consider your community and your region like a welcoming community?
Yeah, I would say we have way more experience with cultural diversity now than we maybe would have if this program didn't exist. We've had to experience many different cultures, many different religions, maybe many different men, like food tastes and traditions. And so I think it's brought our community to a new level because of that. And I think it's interesting to watch, you know, some people who are of the older generation interact with new cultures and getting to learn from that. And I would say my education improved a lot about geography, world history, all of those different things that have come from knowing people from international countries. So I'd say, yes, we are definitely welcoming and more accustomed to different cultures than we would have been 20 years ago.
Okay, that's great, because I think people really want to know that communities are very welcoming. So, wow.
And I would add that one thing that's interesting about our international student program is that just as it would be for a newcomer from anywhere coming to a community the size of ours, and, you know, like I said, at the end of a highway, but often we'd pick these students up in Regina or Saskatoon, which are our international airports close to us. It's about 2.5-3 hours drive. We'd pick these students up often in the night, drive them for hours and hours in the dark, and they'd wake up in this small town, maybe on a farm, maybe with only 4 or 5 houses around them. And they would think, oh my gosh, what have I done? And within a week's time, their perspective of that experience is completely changed. They've acclimatized, they've come to understand how a small community works. They feel like a celebrity because they're this new person in this small community that everyone's excited to meet and get to know. And so five that left because they didn't enjoy it. So that just kind of is an attestation to how easy it is to get to know a the life of a smaller community and how you can adjust. And it's not as scary as it might seem. So I thought that'd be a good message for.
Oh yeah, no, it's a fabulous initiative, and I really, I'm really happy that we could connect and talk about this. So, okay. So I'm going to actually have that link. I think you sent it to me. So everything you're talking about, I'm basically going to have links under my show notes or in my show notes. So people can still get that. And further, so with employment, do you have like local employment boards, or do you have people to help somebody? Like, they won't necessarily go get them the job and not, but you know, I mean, like job boards and so on and so forth. So if somebody relocates or immigrates to your area, they'll have those, that assistance available, settlement offices. So there's lots of resources in there.
So a recent initiative, which is only a couple of years old, is our 3 Points Economic Partnership, which I'll also provide you the link for that. And so that is a regional cooperation with three communities in this area. And so what we've done is we, as economic development officers, there's three of us in this region, and we want to be a liaison to employers for anyone who's interested in jobs or housing in this area. So you can access information on jobs, housing, and what our communities are like on that website. So 3pointsep.ca. And we also have a settlement office in Swift Current, which is about 45 minutes away. And they work regionally. So it's the Southwest Newcomer Welcome Center. And they help with settlement, employment, things, working with your children who are starting school. They offer English classes. And so they are a partner of ours as well that we work with closely to help make sure that anyone who is relocating here and might need a little bit of extra help, we work together to make sure we can do that.
Okay, great. So definitely let's link all that, because I think it's really important for communities to have those resources readily available. And even before people show up in your community, they can reach out to you guys and say, hey, this is what we're looking at, you know, if you like, you know, and they can contact, make contact with you or your two colleagues. So very important that we share that resource for everybody. Okay.
Yeah, so, and we want... I was just going to say, we as the economic development and community development people, we want to just be that community connection so you can find your way within a community. So, you know, maybe you won't know where the rink is or how the skating rink works, or maybe you are interested in starting a chess club, and we are the people that are connected with the community on multiple levels. And so we are here to be that person for you to help find what you need from within a community if you relocate here.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay, so before we close up, I think the one other thing I would like to touch on really briefly is healthcare. So what's your healthcare like there? So we know you have a good education system, we know employment's good, we know everything else, but I haven't really asked you about healthcare.
Yeah, so we have some great clinics in surrounding communities. So about 30 minutes in either direction, there is doctors and health nurse practitioners. So those are kind of clinics that we access from our community. And it's as easy as making an appointment. Often the wait time is usually a day. And you can also get into an emergency in both of those places if necessary. We have ambulance service in both of those communities as well. And Swift Current, which is the 40-minute drive or 30 minutes from some of our surrounding communities, they have a full hospital and array of emergency services, medical services, doctors, dentists, eye doctors, the whole gamut. So it's definitely in reach from where we live.
Yeah, sure. And then when you're living in the city, it takes you 30 to 45 minutes to get to your appointments anyways, right? So it's basically the similar commute.
Yeah, and often in the larger cities, I'm finding the waiting rooms are long, long waits. So luckily, we can just call and hopefully make an appointment, and we don't have to wait in those walk-in clinics.
We just have so many great things going on, Lens, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have a closing question for you. And I really think this really defines, you know, a community or a region. So I'm just gonna ask you, if someone had one day only in your town, where would you tell them to eat? What would you tell them to do to, you know, to go see? How would you tell them to spend their day in your community?
Well, I would say that they should go for a quick morning walk in our regional park, which is just a short distance drive from our town. And it has a beautiful body of water, a golf course, campground, kids playground. So that's where I like to do my morning walks, is out there. And you can see lots of great different kinds of wildlife there too. So that is a fun little recreation activity that's available. Then I would suggest, for either breakfast or lunch, you could go to our local cafe, which has a unique atmosphere. It's fairly small, and we have a great soup and sandwich option, or a great breakfast option, as well as fresh baking. But it's an interesting environment in there, because it has one long table where a lot of people usually sit, whether you're from the community or not. It also has separate tables in there, but everyone who comes there often sits at this one long table, and they all catch up on their day, and they have coffee and visit about what's going on in the community, and often try and get asked 20 questions to the new people who show up there. We have a large map in there that shows where a lot of international visitors have been from. So you can put your pin where you're from and where you're visiting from. And for the rest of the afternoon, I would suggest, if it's farming season, the opportunity to go see a farming operation. So go for a ride in a tractor or a combine, or visit a ranch where you can and see, well, at this time of year, new baby calves being born, and experience what beauty we have in these smaller communities, with, you know, rolling hills, long, vast areas of farmland. And I just think it's unheard of for people who live in larger cities. And then if you make it into the evening here, you can't go without looking at the sky and seeing all the stars. So many international students have came here from especially some of the larger cities in South America and in Asia, and they see stars for the first time in their life. So If you haven't seen stars before, I really encourage you to come out here and see those. So
excellent. Well, Lindsay, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on to Life on the Prairies podcast, and just, you know, create better awareness about living in rural Saskatchewan. And I think you've set the bar pretty high for future guests and communities in terms of what you all have to offer. I mean, you have great employment opportunities, well paid, your affordable housing, your commutes are, you know, really very comparable to, you know, smaller commutes in the city. You have an international school program, you have lots of fun activities, you have lots of things for adults to do in the evening. So, wow, it's just a really, really great place to live and work, I think. And so,
it is a really great place.
Yeah. So thank you so much for your time. And definitely, we will be posting all the links that Lindsay sends us. And I'm also going to ensure that I have her email address and all of her contact information. So if you are someone that's thinking of relocating or immigrating to the prairies, then definitely you need to get in touch with Lindsay, and she will provide you with all the information you need. So thank you so much.
And I will roam these dusty country roads, been searching all this time, and I think I'm almost home.